Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the Mesa City Council study session for Thursday, December 3rd, 2009. It's good for everyone to be back together. I don't think we've been in a study session for probably a month or so.
Have we met?
I don't know. You look vaguely familiar.
I've seen you somewhere.
Oh, okay. We'll begin this morning's meeting with agenda item number one, which is to review items on the agenda for next Monday's regular City Council meeting. We'll begin with page two. Page three. Page four. Councilmember Higgins.
Can we go back to page three, Mayor? I have to catch up with my notes.
Vice Mayor reminds you that you had your chance. I'm sorry.
We can do it on Monday. It's okay. What? We have another opportunity.
You know, Councilmember Higgins, take as much time as you can.
It's on 4D, the change order for the traffic control signal material. I didn't understand the report at all. The background discussion was kind of like, I don't even know what that's saying. So can you explain what, you know, wasn't clear what we were changing in order to
sure,
change.
Sure, I can. Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, this is for street name signs. So we'll be purchasing more street name signs. I brought Derek Whitting with me. Derek's a superintendent in transportation. Maybe you could describe what we're doing a little bit.
And Dan, quickly, also, I think the confusion a little bit is you have an existing contract.
Yes.
So what's going on with that?
That's, okay.
I think, part of the question, too.
Okay.
Councilmember Higgins, Mayor Smith. Currently, we do outsource fabrication of D3s, but we do it in a roundabout way. We have three separate contracts that we're using to accomplish that. Essentially, we're consolidating the three into the one. We're receiving materials from vendor A, I'll call them, materials from vendor B, and then shipping those materials that we receive from them to vendor C to do the actual fabrication. So essentially what we're going to do is eliminate the service agreement that we have, a $30,000 annual service agreement, to just do the fabrication. That does not include any of the materials. And we're going to put them all back onto the other vendor that was supplying us the blanks and the materials in the first place.
So this really isn't a new cost. We're just reallocating our resources to get our materials.
Great. Thank you.
And the purpose for the consolidation? I mean, why is this a better system than using A, B, and C?
Mayor Smith, vendor A is actually supplying us the blanks anyway. So what the city basically is a storage place for vendor C. We receive them in, we hold them, and then we're shipping them off to another person when the primary vendor could have done the job in the
right.
first place.
Okay.
And frankly, Mayor,
I wanted to clarify.
Frankly, we're having some quality issues too with our secondary vendor, and this will alleviate that.
Okay, good.
Oh, and Mayor, just one other thing. I just wanted to say that Derek is another Michigan Tech grad.
We're both Husky alums.
Councilmember, I don't believe
that
was on the agenda.
That's why we get
we pull this item from the consent agenda.
Yeah.
That's why we get those wonderful answers, you see.
Thank you, Member.
I do have one other question, not for you guys, but on 4E.
And we are glad that there is somebody from Michigan that we can be proud of.
Mayor, you're so funny this morning.
Say something? What? Okay, 4E.
Yeah, this goes back to a couple questions I had, you know, before about like seized vehicles that we get through the police department. And here, I know that many of these vehicles are trucks and wide, long beds, et cetera, crew cabs, but there's some just like cars. So is there ever an ability to, instead of purchasing new cars, actually say, you know what, you know, have a list of what you're going to be buying in the next year or two and say, hey, we see something very similar, it just needs a new engine cooling system or something, that you could actually use that police seized vehicle to fill some of these orders?
Councilmember Higgins, we actually do that on these trucks. These are actually vocational trucks, work trucks. So a lot of times we'll take bodies off of trucks that are leaving and put them on the new chassis to save money. We also take vehicles out of service that have maybe lower miles, and we replace those instead of actually going out and buying new vehicles. So we do that.
And I'd like to say one thing. I'm very much aware of your efforts, and this always comes up with the autos, about why we're buying from out-of-city dealerships. And I'm very much aware, Mr. Brady has informed me. Thank you so much. It's early. Come on. Has informed me of your efforts to really reach out to local dealerships and to try to include them and give them every opportunity to participate in these things. And we understand that this is not like going down to the local lot and bartering with a salesperson, that this is a very specialized process that many dealerships just are either not set up to participate in or choose not to, because of the very thin margins that exist in government contracts, which is why we buy so often from out of town. You know, Midway Chevrolet, for example, this is one of their main businesses, is selling to the government through the state contract. And so they've got it down. They've got an entire department that's all they do. Local Chevy dealers in Mesa don't do that. And so it's a burden on them. And they, in many cases, either choose not to to participate, or they just can't compete with the types of deals that these others can give. So I really do appreciate the efforts that Fleet and Purchasing have gone through to reach out. And I know you've really put forth a great effort, and I want people to understand that this isn't just a willy-nilly effort where we just throw out something and don't care, because we really are, in purchasing and everything we do in the city, trying to include more city businesses and giving them every opportunity that we can to have them participate. So I appreciate those efforts. I really do.
Thank you, Mayor.
And Mayor, while we have Pete here.
Oh, okay.
We missed him the last time, but just not only has Pete and purchasing really worked hard on reaching out, and we actually did get some bids from local vendors. They just weren't.
That's correct.
Couldn't compete with the prices on the others, but we'll continue to do that. But I want to also recognize that since he's here, sitting here, Pete was awarded the 2009 Outstanding Fleet Member of the Year by the Rocky Mountain Fleet Management Association, and he served in that capacity. Served with the association for many years, so he's been very active in that. He's been the chair of the Arizona chapter and chair of the National Website Committee for many years. And so he's really made a contribution both at the regional, national level and for us, and we just want to congratulate him. And he won the general election of the president-elect position for the National Board of Directors of the Rocky Mountain Fleet Management Association. So we just want to congratulate him for that.
Thank you, Chris.
Congratulations, Steve.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thanks for bringing that up, Chris. Okay. Page 4. Councilmember Summers.
Thank you, Mayor. Item 4J is the Motorola Upgrade Assistance Plan, which is a move toward interoperability of our radio systems for public safety, police, and fire. As you are all well aware, one of the issues in New York City during 9/11 that resulted in the death of a number of firefighters and police officers were the fact that the radios between police and fire didn't work together, so they couldn't communicate safety conditions on the ground. This is a positive move toward interoperability of police fire departments, and there's a valley-wide effort to move in this direction. We had tried to work with Phoenix, as Chris Brady did, but unfortunately we weren't able to quite get everybody on the same page because of some leadership issues over there, and we could not resolve some governance and ownership issues. Chris, I'm wondering, now that Phoenix has a new city manager, new deputy city manager, is there an opportunity to approach them and see if they're willing to see the light in some of these issues for the contract that put together?
Thank you, Councilmember and Mayor and Council members. Interesting you should ask. Yesterday, the new city manager of Phoenix approached me and asked me about this. We believe, and we've explained to a lot of the other cities that we've already made a large commitment with our regional partners on the East Valley to move forward with this system. But we are making and believe very strongly and are committed to maintaining the interoperability throughout the entire valley. Frankly, we believe the technology at some point will allow it maybe statewide, because it's interesting as we've developed our relation, stood up our East Valley Regional Coalition, we have attracted a lot of interest from, you know, Salt River Pima groups and other even cities even further east, and really it's more not a, it's not our interest. Our interest is in bringing them in. It's kind of a technological limitations we have, but there really does seem, there is a great effort, and everybody understands the need to be able to communicate cooperatively across jurisdictional boundaries. And we have every intent, even though we are establishing this system for the East Valley, which has really been very successful, and a lot of that credit goes to Mike and Dale, and we've got our partners from Apache Junction and Queen Creek and Gilbert have really seen the value in this, and it's functioned very well. But we have every intention to make sure that our, we can continue to communicate with all our sister cities to the west of us, and specifically including Phoenix. So we will be having that dialogue with Phoenix. It does seem like there is an interest on their part to come and visit with us, and we plan on sitting down and really talking about how we can move forward together to make sure that public safety is regardless of where you're responding, if you're having to provide for assistance in Mesa or Phoenix or Tempe, that our public safety personnel will not be in jeopardy and they'll be able to continue to communicate.
That's really good news. And as you sit down, I do support your concerns on governance and ownership of the material still. So thank you.
Councilmember Fender.
Now that Chief Bradbury's gone, and I know he was quite instrumental in putting this together, who is our chief contact person, since City of Mesa is the administrative manager? Would it be you two gentlemen or anybody at Fire? Or who runs this program?
Dale, why don't you talk about how it's set up now?
Well, currently we're the administrative manager for the TRWC, Mesa is. I'm Dale Shaw, executive director for the TRWC. So basically, I oversee the network operations and ensure that costs are distributed out to the members and that we're providing the good service they expect. Mike is responsible for actually seeing the day-to-day technical operation and ensuring that everything is kept up.
But Dale, from the public safety side, who are the representatives from fire and police? I mean, they're obviously very interested and important stakeholders in this process. So how do you get that feedback? Where's that link with them?
We actually have a subcommittee process that involves all the partners. Mesa participates in that as well as the other jurisdictions. Queen Creek, Apache Junction, Gilbert, Apache Junction Fire District, they all participate in that subcommittee process. We have both an operations subcommittee as well as a technical subcommittee that reports up any issues that need to be dealt with.
But Councilmember and Mayor, I mean, at the end of the day, our main customers are the public safety departments. I mean, they're the primary. I mean, we have others, but obviously this has to work for police and fire, and they have to feel comfortable that it provides the coverage for them and delivering this. I'm not sure exactly who fire has assigned now that Chief Bradbury has moved on, but I'm sure that Chief Beck has made that assignment within.
And the reason why I ask, I remember how important when this was initially proposed, this TOPAZ system for the East Valley, how important our leadership role was in that. And I just hope we don't lose any of that, you know, that we're still the strong leaders and really making sure this gets accomplished. So thank you for doing that. Thanks, Mayor.
So if I'm to understand this, we've got a program that we have implemented that we're upgrading that will bring multiple communities together to increase levels of public service and do something that's really a lot better for our citizens. Is that accurate?
Correct. We've already essentially created the organization of the, I'll call it the East Valley Group. We are moving towards about a, the transition to our kind of standalone system. And while we'll have two separate systems, we expect, meaning a system on the East Valley and system centered in Phoenix, our intention is to make sure those systems can communicate back and forth.
Yeah, too often it gets called a separation when in fact we call it more of a reconfiguration, because we are establishing our own system in the southeast region. However, we are working with the other partners in the Phoenix area regional wireless cooperative to establish interoperability talk groups where if there's response to an issue together, that we have the ability to still communicate. And we're really establishing the ability through an IGA to have that ongoing interoperability. In the long run, and Mr. Brady mentioned this, technology should provide the ability to fill in the gaps here in terms of having something closer to seamless interoperability.
This kind of multi-region solution sounds too good to be true. I'm just wondering who out there is waiting to sue us to stop it. Okay. Enough of that.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Page 5.
Mayor.
Page 6.
Oh, you didn't hear the mayor.
I'm sorry.
I had my hand raised and everything.
Go ahead.
5A, I just have a quick question. The city received the $9.6 million for neighborhood stabilization, and according to this report, we've just done 15 homes. So, I mean, we spent approximately $2 million of the $9.6. How's it going since you're here and it's on the agenda?
It's going real well for us. We've done a great job. We've spent a majority of the funding that was allocated for our programs. The only thing that we're doing now is waiting for the nonprofit to do their share, because they were given about $2.5 million, and we're working with them to make sure that that happens.
Okay, great. I just want to make sure we don't leave money sitting anywhere.
Oh, no, I think we're leading the way.
Excellent. All right, thank you very much.
You bet.
Thank you. Vice Mayor.
Ray, don't run away too fast.
Yes, sir.
In talking about the nonprofits, we had a challenge early on trying to get the homes where by the time we were able to get through the process, the homes were gone just because of the way the market was. We have nonprofits experiencing the same thing. We were able to get over the hurdle by changing the process. Is there any way we can help nonprofits who are challenged the same way, that they have the funds more readily available to move when an opportunity is there instead of having to jump through some hurdles before they actually get the money? How is that process working?
That process is working good. We've contacted the nonprofit, and we gave them the contacts. We're there. We told them that we would help them every step of the way. The other thing that we made arrangements for is once they are closing on a property, if they give us that closing date, we provide them the money on that day to close, so there won't be any shortfall or any short notice or time for them to proceed to make sure that they're able to get that property.
What do they have to go through before they can actually get a contract to close the property? What kind of hurdles are the delays? Because the delays are really the problem in this foreclosure market.
What we've done is we've created a communication between the banks and that allows us to work directly with them before some of these homes are listed. We have worked with a nonprofit, told them that we can do the exact same thing for them to make sure if they have a home that we can make that connection for them so they're able to get that property before it actually hits the market, so they're able to purchase it, make a bid on it, and then we will help them through any paperwork process, anything along the way to make sure that that happens.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Anything else on page 5? Councilmember Higgins.
excuse me. Item 6A is discussing the FEMA flood plan, plane. Et cetera. My concern, I know that this is just agreeing with what FEMA's come up with, but just a little historical reference. There's some sections of the city that were deemed floodplains when we've had neighbors that worked for like over 10 years with FEMA to get them not designated a floodplain because they really weren't a floodplain, but their insurance is like triple type thing, house homeowners insurance. So I want to make sure that we are like following up when they make these changes to see how it affects our residents, and that, you know, we don't get a neighborhood designated a floodplain and then their insurance is through the roof because somebody needs to save.
I'm a little confused because floodplain shouldn't affect homeowners insurance.
Oh, it does big time.
Huge. Question I have is there's flood insurance, but does it also go through on the homeowners insurance?
Well,
you can't buy
Alex has
insurance.
A huge section of his district.
The government's the only one that issues flood insurance, right?
And they've skyrocketed the premium.
Oh, that's what I'm asking.
But there's areas that you would look at when you drive down Val Vista and Brown and you say floodplain.
No, I understand that. I just want to make sure because just educate me a little bit. It says regular homeowners insurance My understanding was that flood insurance was issued by the federal government. It's different than regular homeowners insurance.
But except if you're in a floodplain, your homeowner says, hey, you're in a floodplain, you have to pick up flood insurance or we're not covered.
Okay, all right.
You know, so it's...
All right. It's a technical issue, but I just want to make sure I understand, okay?
It does affect many of us.
Well, it affects your total insurance cost.
Yes.
I agree with that. Okay, I got you. I understand.
So the concern is that, you know, even though FEMA's changing it, and we have to follow them, we can argue along the way if it's doing something that doesn't make any sense.
Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, I agree with you. But these changes are very administrative in nature. All we're doing is referring to the current standards, the current FEMA maps, and those sorts of things. Every time we get a floodplain designation of any type, we go back and spend quite a bit of time with them. We've got one that came up in the last 5 years that we've been working with them on and working to find a solution to. So this is a pretty common conversation with them. What this does for us is if we keep current, what it allows us to do is be able to offer the flood insurance to the homeowners located in the floodplain. So we have, it's an administrative thing we have to do so that they can get the insurance in the floodplain. So.
Okay. All right, great, thank you.
Are the procedures for, do we still have the Lomar, Clomar, those kind of things?
Yes,
are those procedures been changed, or are those part of, changes part of this, or is those the same as they've normally been as
Mayor,
far as petitioning and getting things out of floodplains?
Mayor, those all remain the same. These are really just updating standards and references and those sorts of things within.
So if you have, like Councilmember Higgins talks about, you know, homes where they believe that they're not in a floodplain, really the only way to rectify that is to go through the formal process of getting the designation removed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that the homeowners undertake, or does the city step in sometimes, or is it a combination, or what?
Actually, through the development process is when the Clomar and the Lomar occur for new properties. They go through the process as they develop the property. They go.
And just so everyone understands, Clomar and Lomar are acronyms for
it's the
process where you go and you actually try to redefine or designate floodplains so that you remove something from a floodplain.
Yes, sir. That's correct. That's
just
the process
people
that they use.
May not know what these nice little acronyms are.
That's the process you use when you work through the flood control, Maricopa County flood control. In Maricopa County, we as cities, we all participate in one flood control agency through the county, and it's funded by all of our homeowners and stuff in the various cities that participate in the region. And so you go through them, and the process is that you go in and you apply, and you go through another study to look at the floodplain and determine whether you're in or out, whether you can raise your elevations, those sorts of things to get out of the floodplain. And that's the paperwork process, is the Clomar and the Lomar and the designations associated with that. And if the flood control agency and FEMA, which is the federal agency, all concur, then it comes out of the floodplain. They modify their maps and so forth. That's the process.
Residents understand some of these floodplains were designated before there was any development in the area, and they were based on traditional unobstructed flows. And with development and changes and things like that, there are many times when things, as Councilmember Higgins said, they used to be in a floodplain, but because of development and even perhaps flood control efforts upstream, they've changed. They no longer in a floodplain.
Right. Beth, we participate with the county on several stormwater management diversion devices or whatever. So
yeah, and these floodplains are not changed. If something's done upstream that completely eliminates it, they don't. The flood control does not go downstream and change the floodplain.
We have.
They wait for somebody to come in who has an insurance issue or development issue, and they have to go through this Lomar-Clomar process.
That's correct.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make clear. So if a resident has a huge problem, they think they're not in there, what would they do? Let's say they bought a house. They weren't the development. It's already been through the development process, but maybe it was 10 years ago, and perhaps 10 years ago it wasn't a floodplain. And now, because of things that have happened upstream, it's not in a floodplain. What would they do? What would you suggest they do?
Contact us? Yes.
Okay.
They would. I'd suggest they contact us in the engineering department, and we'll go with them to talk to the flood control department and at the county and talk to them about getting on their list. They do have a certain amount of money every year to do planning studies through the district. That money is like all government agencies is declining over time. But there is some money available to do studies through them, and if they look at it and determine that it's a significant enough issue, then they may propose that they do a study to do it. Or the homeowner can get together with their homeowner association or a group in the area and propose to do a study to change the floodplain.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything else on page 5? Councilmember Higgins.
Tiny technicality on the 6B that I just need clarification. I think it's Gordon. It's discussing the livestock ordinance. And just the one question was, we're talking about 35,000 square foot lots. We're not talking about houses that are in an R135 area. Like say you're in an R135 PAD, so my lot's 33,300. I don't qualify for the 35,000 lot.
That would be correct.
Great. That's it. Thank you.
Okay. Page 6. I have one item on page 6. Item 6D. There have been some questions that have just come up very recently, in the last day or two, and so we're going to pull item 6D from the agenda and discuss that a little bit more, and that'll come back at a later time, okay, after we've resolved a couple of those issues that have been brought up. Anything else on page 6? Councilmember Summers and then Councilmember Higgins.
On item 6E, which is a continuation of the charter schools council use permit, as I read the material, it's going to be an 18-month. Is there anybody can speak on this one? An 18-month cap on that, which is a continuation of the previous one. The issue with this is it's supposed to be a temporary council use permit that was granted for a school. It's going to be connected with ASU Polytechnic. Which is a fine use. The problem with this particular location was that it's in a pretty darn close to a flight overlay.
Yes, Mayor, Councilmember Summers, it is in that flight path coming out of Phoenix Mesa Gateway. It's an industrial property. It's not really the prime location for this type of use, but they ran into some financing issues with regard to getting the new school built as they had intended. They still plan to make that move on to the ASU campus. This is a request for that 18-month extension so they can get those things in
because of the bond place. Condition, right. And just you can't get along.
Right.
Is the when we did this the first time, it was with the condition that the parents have to sign
all those things.
I want to be careful with what I call this thing. And an acknowledgement of the fact that it's a flight plane and the noise and what goes on with the airport. Is that part of this continuation?
All those things continue, yes.
Okay. That's what I want to know. Thank you.
Yeah, Councilmember Denter.
For Mr. Wesley, have we gotten any clarity with regard to the state legislature's efforts about being unable to block any charter school as far as zoning and things? Any more information on that?
Mayor, Councilmember Fenter, the legislation, as I've read it, understand it, is that we treat the schools the same, and our ordinance requires council use permits for any school, and so we are treating all the schools the same. So at this point, we have no issues that we're aware of.
And I think the legislation is that you can't treat you can't treat charter schools differently than what you would other school public schools. And what we're saying is that we treat all of them
correct.
The same. Okay. I was going to say something, but I'm not going to say it. Thank you. All right.
But is the legislation having to do with where they can be located?
That's – well, where it came up, I believe, some people are really upset about charter schools going into strip centers and non-traditional sites. I think is one of the issues that came up. Are there other issues?
Mayor, in Mesa, the issue came up several years ago with an elementary school going into or adjacent to an industrial area, and so the council passed an ordinance saying schools in other than residential districts must get a council use permit, and so we treat all schools the same, whether it's a charter school or public school. If they're not going in a residential district, if they're going in commercial or industrial, they need to come in for the council use permit.
Right.
And that's what the state says, is that you've got to treat all schools the same.
Yeah, I think at the state level, though, it was for charter schools going into other non-traditional, charter schools going into non-traditional. This one, we had a public school that went into industrial. Charter schools, I think it's them going into non-traditional, I would call it, whether it be an industrial area or a former big box or even a strip center. And I think that was and there were some cities that were trying to preclude that or talking about precluding that. So if a charter school, well, so let me ask you, if a charter school came in, wanted to come in, to a new location? Because I, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't recall a flurry of council use permits that we've had for charter school locations, and yet it seems like there's been a lot of charter schools established in the last year or two. That we ran through here? Okay, I'm fuzzy.
Yes, Mayor, we've had, I don't know, it seems like a couple every year that come through and come through this process.
So it's not that frequent, but
right.
It does happen.
It's usually kind of a spring, summer thing when they get their new charters and they're trying to get ready for
the
next year.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remember the specific instances, and I can't remember, but Councilmember Summers reminded me of one, so. Okay. Yeah.
And we were fine with that one.
No,
this one's just over the plains constantly. I just
no, I'm just trying to remember a specific situation where we had it, and it was so straightforward that it didn't jump out, so that's okay. All right. Councilmember Hick, you're done? Okay. Anything else on page 6? Page 7? Mr. Brady?
Mayor, I know there's been several questions related to 7B. If council would like, we could maybe explain a little bit about the kind of where we've come from and where we are today. But I know it's gone back and forth, and I know as we've talked to the council, there's been some questions. I don't know if the council is interested in that. Dialogue now?
I'd be interested
or?
In hearing it.
Okay. So I would like to ask Mr. Wesley, because one of the things as we go through this process, I know we come to council at different stages as we go through the phases of review and seeking the advice from, or seeking the, I guess it's the advice from our different advisory boards. And so maybe, John, you could kind of walk through the history and where we put it today. And then talk about the efforts that what we're really trying to do here. I know it's been kind of couched as an elimination of a board, which certainly from the regulatory standpoint it is, and I think it's going to be, and part of that is our resourcing issue with your department. But we've talked about, and something we want the council to continue to talk about, is not eliminating the community engagement component of participation from downtown, and talk a little bit about how we would move forward with that. So if you could cover those topics, please.
Okay. Mayor and Council, just again real quickly run over the history. With the slowdown in the economy and the level of development activity and some of the reorganization that's taken place within the city structure last spring, staff received some direction to take a look at these processes that we use in the advisory boards and see if there were ways that we could reorganize things to improve the consistency across the city, to continue to help streamline the processing while still maintaining quality. We've been improving the quality of development that occurs and continuing to make sure we have citizen involvement in that process. So with that, back in June 4th, council study session, staff came to the council and talked about some options where we could eliminate the DDC, combine those functions in with the planning and zoning board so that we could, again, have that consistency across the city. And with the design review board to change their function to be an appeals board, that staff would have the responsibility in conjunction with a consulting architect to review the cases that come in. Design review board would meet periodically to provide some feedback overall on design issues and help set some design guidelines and those types of things. At that time, we received some input from the council, some concerns about the elimination of the Downtown Development Committee and the expertise they've had for issues in the downtown area. Some concerns about the expense of the consulting architect approach that was being thought of, and again some concerns for the amount of citizen involvement. Some questions about if we had involved the advisory boards themselves in the discussion, and we at that point it was fairly early in the process and we hadn't formally done so. And so we received a direction from the council to continue to explore these options and to go visit with the advisory boards and get some input from them, which we did through the summer and early fall through October. Went to the P&Z board, DDC, and design review board to get their thoughts and input on how we might make these changes, how they might work. Based on those discussions, we came back to council at your October 8th study session and presented a revised list of ideas and recommendations. The first of which, again, was that with the DRB, that instead of eliminating them from the review process, we could keep the work session process that they go through currently and get their feedback on projects as they come in. It's been working very well the last couple of years, very informal way that we can get that design input that helps applicants through the process, and also continue to work on the idea of the guidelines. but staff would, after that initial input at the work sessions, take over the responsibility of signing off on the applications. We feel like that helps speed the process while still getting good input, eliminates the cost of the consulting architect. So we made that recommendation, which the council supported at that time. The other was with regard to the Downtown Development Committee. We're still looking at the idea of eliminating the Downtown Development Committee as one of the official review bodies, so we can streamline that process and have consistency throughout the city. The mayor in particular talked about the Main Street corridor, and everything should kind of go through that same process along there. And so we thought that was still a good idea. We want to also improve upon and look at ways to replace that specialized input with some type of neighborhood advisory committee or neighborhood planning committee that can provide that more specialized input through a planning process and through a development review process, help maybe formalize some of that citizen participation process. When applications come in, we can recommend they go work with this committee and provide input to that overall planning and zoning process. So the report that we provided, that's still one of the issues that we want to develop and bring forward for council consideration. We have examples of that. The Citrus sub-area, Lehigh sub-areas have been very successful in a similar type, a little bit less formal way. As applications come in, we get their feedback. They've been helpful in the design review processes. West Main, Falcon Field, we've also used that kind of process. We haven't had as much follow-up. Of course, the economy's been slow afterward, and so more formalized setting we might be able to replace the DDC with downtown. The ad hoc committees that we've had in terms of light rail or formalizing now with the Central Maine plan kind of give us a core of people that we can use, we think, and help establish in that ongoing committee. They can give us that feedback and provide that localized level of input. So that, again, quickly is kind of where we're at right now. We have before you the going forward with that elimination of the DDC in Title II as a particular agenda item.
So, John, what we're suggesting is from a regulatory basis, we would eliminate the DDC as a body, as an advisory group. Now, that doesn't, but I want to make clear is, sometimes we talk and we don't talk, maybe out in the public, they don't understand. What we plan on doing, though, that doesn't eliminate this, any of those, any development plans or whatever that would still require to, they would go through planning and zoning.
Right.
So we still have that. That's not being eliminated. What we are proposing, and I think the council, as we've discussed this in a variety of different options, is utilizing the initiatives of our neighborhood plans or sub-regional plans where we develop those. We've done the West Main Corridor. We're now doing the Central Corridor plan where we actually go and bring together stakeholders from that area to help us develop those plans for those specific areas. And the idea possibly to council, maybe we can formalize this a little bit more down the road, is continuation of those stakeholders as a body, as an advisory group, who are familiar with those plans that have been adopted by council, that they would continue in some form after the plan's been adopted, so that then as proposals, development proposals, are brought to the city that are contained within that area that has been, that plan that's been adopted, then they would be part of the group that would receive the plans, they would give input and advice, and they would weigh in that, and that would be a formal part of maybe a formal process for the developer to go to, and then those recommendations would make it their way to the Planning and Zoning Commission. Do I have that?
Yes.
Pretty close.
And if I could, I guess there's a couple of items that are sort of confusing here. Number one, what we have here at 7B, and thank you for the update, but we talked about both the design review and the downtown development. What we have here has nothing to do with design review.
No, just EDC.
We're not taking any action on design review. That's yet to come before
right.
us, right?
Yes, Mayor.
Come in the form of an ordinance. We've come
an
to
ordinance.
Council several times. We get that, and we've asked for directions several times. But now we're doing the formal, beginning, at least for the DDC, the formal ordinance
right.
process to eliminate
right.
it.
We are anticipating right now, we have it on the P&Z agenda for December, to consider that other part, and I expect to have it here at council in January.
Now, the second thing that's a little bit confusing is we keep using the word eliminate. And I understand that from a statutory standpoint, perhaps that's a technical term that you have to eliminate. But then I'm hearing, and I think the sense of what I've understood of the council is that while we change or we transition, maybe is a better word, the regulatory process, where we transition it from the Downtown Development Committee as it's currently embedded in our ordinance to the Planning and Zoning Commission, that committee may survive or may transition into a different role and function. That's not included here, but you're going to come with some formal proposal that would carry on. And the idea would be, whereas the current Downtown Development Committee has regulatory authority over the square mile. Is that correct? Over the town center?
Yes, they're the official advisory board within.
Well, they're not an advisory board. They are a regulatory board. A regulatory advisory board. You've got to go through them to get to us on a zoning case.
Right.
So I understand they're not the final determinator. That's a good word. They're not the final one, but they play the role of P&Z for the square mile in the town center.
Correct.
What we're saying is that we're going to transition or transfer that regulatory advisory role to planning and zoning, so they have that same role citywide. But in the long term, if what I'm hearing and my understanding is that this downtown development group of people, so we don't have anything, continues on or expands their role in a sense that they still become an advisory, but without the regulatory formality. And that perhaps, and what I'm hearing is that instead of the square mile being the boundaries of their influence, that their influence expand to areas that are affected with the central city. And that would be, for example, the central corridor study in that area. So that,
right.
And so I think they're not regulatory in nature, but they're advisory in nature in the sense that they get involved and have input. But for an area that goes beyond Country Club and Mesa Drive, because there are issues that don't end at Country Club and Mesa Drive that still affect the town center.
Correct. And Mayor and Council, what I think what makes this process so appealing is that now you can have advisory groups that are actually making advice based on adopted plans. You know, we have the West Main plan. We'll have the central. So they actually have a context of a plan that they've worked to help put together. They've brought to the council that's been adopted, and so now when development proposals come to them, they have a context of those plans that have been adopted to go back to, if you would, kind of be the to show that, you know, keep the integrity of the plan with the development and making those proposals work well with those plans that have been adopted.
So can we anticipate a formal proposal from staff to come back? And, you know, right now we're talking about these informal groups that exist. Okay. Are we going to have a formal proposal?
That's what we'd like to do.
What the next stage of
that
this
would be the next
be.
Stage is to.
And we're beginning with this group here, since it's the one that's on the table
now. That's correct.
Is that okay, Councilmember Cavanaugh?
As I hear what we're talking about, the level of regulatory authority stays the same. You're transferring the authority from one board to another. The Downtown Development Committee is an advisory board to the council in the same way that planning and zoning is. So I don't want us to get off track and focus on the idea that somehow we're eliminating or reducing regulatory authority. That regulatory authority and decision-making will still be in place with a different group. What I'm hearing, though, as well, is that one of the original reasons to do this was staff resources. And with coming back with an additional proposal for a more formal role for the Downtown Development Committee and the other advisory bodies throughout the city or through the region or through the neighborhoods, I can foresee a situation where you may have an increased need for staff resources. So I really, I guess my concern, my questions will continue to be watching, do you really have staff savings from what you're proposing here? Because you're adding, you're formalizing citizen involvement that we have now and from a series of informal groups, which require staff resources as well, in the same way as you staff the Downtown Development Committee. So I think it's important for us as a council to continue to monitor that, because again, the primary moving force for this several months ago was the issue of the reduced staff resources in the department, and I think the staff time is going to either be the same or increased with what we're proposing. So I think we just need to keep that in mind.
Councilmember Richens,
with all due respect to staff, I know they work very hard, but to me, the eye on the prize is getting development right in our city, having development forms right, having citizen input correctly done, so we can avoid a lot of the pitfalls and problems that we've had in the past. We've done a pretty good job, I think, generally, but really driving decision-making into neighborhoods for developments that affect them, and that's the eye on the prize. And if it creates an increased burden or the need for more staff, then let's hire them and let's get it done, because it's more important, I think, to get development right than to worry about burdens on staff or if it's going to increase. And, yeah, there's going to be some trade-offs if we have to spend the money on that, but I think the development of and build-out of this city, especially on an infill standpoint, is one of the most important things we're going to be doing over the next 20 years. And so we're laying the groundwork for establishing a system of doing that correctly here. And so I just want to make sure we keep focused on what the primary goal of this is.
And I'm assuming that as your proposal comes back, once again, you use those other sub-areas as examples, but we're starting with this. And I'm assuming your proposal will address some of the concerns that have been raised. Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you. And I, listening to Councilmember Kavanaugh's concerns, what the thing we haven't celebrated enough is how much streamlining we've done in the planning and zoning process. We have site plans that stop there now. We can run concurrently projects through. We have hearing officers. So I've been very supportive that we're moving from although the DDC has been really positive in a lot of things that they did, but moving this process to P&Z, P&Z's processes are now more streamlined. But the one that really stands out, the example of why I know this is going to work is I look back at the southeast corner of McDowell and Val Vista. I watched that from inception on P&Z come through, and I just drove by the other day, and there's a beautiful project there. That went through the Citrus sub-area group. They had tremendous amount of influence. It was a positive interaction. It came through P&Z and somewhat, through the streamlined process, and now we have a project that everybody's happy with. That could have been a disaster. So I know the sub-area plans work. I know how I see how I believe that they'll work well, and I think this is a great step of moving that regulatory over to a very streamlined P&Z process. So I'm very supportive.
Okay. Anything else? Councilmember Summers.
I just wanted to bounce off something David said about you think there's, first of all, I concur with just about everything, except I don't think it's a 20-year plan in downtown. I think really we got to look at a 5-year plan. Now, light rail is coming. So what's that? Citywide. Well, right, but this is a downtown area. Well, you're talking citywide. The downtown has, there are a lot of things coming through downtown, new plans, transit-oriented development, light rail, that it's not going to be 20 years. 20 years is a long-term out. We're looking really at the next 5 years being very formative with the downtown area, and we're paying a lot of attention. I concur that we need to make sure that the process we have in place really focuses on downtown. We need an actionable agenda. We need to have staff support to make sure that happens. My concern with the proposal, if I have any, is not the elimination DDC. It seems almost a little bit more haphazard the way we're going about this, where we're going to eliminate the board, and then we're going to look at some of these other processes, and then maybe move forward on doing some other structure that I have no idea exactly that's going to look like, which is really not the way that this board has or staff has dealt with other things. It seems to that other things had been more thoroughly thought out and planned, and there was a series of actionable steps that were going to be taking, and I'm not sure that we're there with this particular one. Also that, we keep talking about cutting regulation and streamlining processes. We've been doing very well with that. P&Z has done fairly well. They are a fairly generic board, but they're not a regulatory board. They are advisory. So the regulatory board of this city is this council. We're the ones that make the rules. We're the ones that make ordinance. So this isn't cutting regulation. It may be cutting a little red tape, but My concern is with downtown, we have 5-year focus. We need to have a plan to move forward, something that's actionable, that's measurable, and I don't see it yet. So that's what I'm hoping to see in the near future. Thank you.
Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, at first I was a little hesitant with this proposal, but thinking back on what the P&Z board has done recently with DMB. My initials are getting confused this morning. With DMB and more with the form-based zoning, I think that experience is going to help them greatly with infill development. So I think this is going in the right direction.
Vice Mayor?
And listening to all the comments, what everybody needs to understand is we have been moving in a lot of different areas trying to bring it all together to for the processes, for the zoning, for codes, for organization, and adjusting to staffing levels. So many components all coming together. A lot has been done in the past few years. There have been a lot of improvement. And it's just we're trying to bring it all to a focal point and get it all done. And that's the biggest challenge right now of where all the pieces fall in to get it done. But we have to move on each of these pieces. And ultimately, we're looking for the long-term solution, but again, on the short term, there's some things that need to be addressed. But overall, there are so many components to making this all happen. I appreciate Alex's comments about the success of what has happened so far, but we still have a long way to go. And I hate to say a long way to go because I hope we can get the process finished as quickly as possible, because we still have to get the code, the form-based code that we're trying to do, the zoning, all of that that we've been working on for a number of years. It's just want to get it all done, tie it all up and finish the package, and we're still doing a little bit here and there, and we have to do that. We can't just do a full sweep because you have to have transition and get it all in place. And most importantly, as Dave said, we want to do it right. We want to make sure we have it done right, and that's what takes so long. But everybody needs to understand, there's so many moving parts to bring this all together. This is just one component, but I do think it's something that needs to be done because we are working so much better, as mentioned, with the sub-areas in bringing together, and we need to just be uniform throughout the city in how we do it.
I appreciate all the comments because I think everyone's made good points and valid points, and as we move forward, I hope that as these proposals crystallize moving forward, that these issues or these points are taken into consideration. I think with this one, the thing that's concerned me is that we tend to get lost in the semantics. We talk words like eliminate and regulatory. And the truth of the matter is that whether the official technical role of P&Z is advisory to the development community, they're as much a regulatory board as anything else because the process is very regulatory in nature. There are very specific rules and points and processes and steps you have to take. And I can tell you as a developer, you look at P&Z going through that committee as much regulatory as you do coming through the council. It's just a different step. And I understand that from a technical standpoint that they're advisory because since they don't have the final determination. But from a process standpoint, that's not how they're perceived. And I think that the purpose and the hope of this is that we streamline that process. Not only that, but I appreciate what Councilmember Higgins said about all the changes we've made and are in the process of making as it relates to our new philosophy, which is really a very, very progressive philosophy as it relates to land use and how we're going to determine land use. And it especially works with infill because the way we're headed, which is to grant more flexibility while raising standards at the same time and going to more of a form-based, is a mindset and a philosophy that you can't hit every once in a while. And where I feel comfortable with this is that I believe that the planning and zoning has been involved in this process. They will deal with it literally on a daily or monthly basis in other areas. And the mindset or the philosophy that we're dealing with out at Mesa Proving Grounds is very similar to a philosophy we'll use in the Fiesta District and everything as it relates to the attitude we take toward encouraging development and especially infill, and I think that to consolidate that activity into a planning zoning which is dealing with this on a daily basis is something that will streamline the process. It will help the development community to understand what they need to do, and I don't think we're losing much on the specific focus because I think that P&Z cares as much about downtown as we do. None of us live in downtown, and yet we're all passionate about it because it's the heart and soul of our city. And I don't think we're going to lose that. But I am a little bit concerned with something, council member, not what you said, but I think he makes a good point. I'd like to get a little bit more meat on the next step that we do. Just sort of leave, it seems like we're leaving it hanging out there that we're going to eliminate this board, which may be a statutory requirement, but we're just sort of hanging out there. So I would like it if you came back with a proposal that talks about that next step, addresses some of the concerns that Councilmember Kavanaugh's brought up as far as staff utilization, and maybe better defines the advisory role that this revised, and even though it may not be a downtown, but maybe a central city or a central corridor advisory board would have. So, you know, that's something I'd like. I don't know if the rest of the council feels that way, but if you could come back with a little bit more meat on that and specifics, and I don't know how that'll play out, but I'd be interested to see what staff has to say, is what the next step would be. We understand from the zoning standpoint, the next step is that things transition to the planning and zoning. Maybe what you propose the next step to be as far as the formalization of this successor advisory committee. Yeah, Councilmember Summers.
I'm just wondering on that point, Mayor, which is a good one, if we couldn't get that before we make our final decision. I'd like to see what the meat is and the real plan before we move forward.
You know,
what's the rush?
I think, you know, my feeling is I think the main thing is to consolidate the regulatory process. And that I don't think you need to step two. I don't think one is dependent upon the other. I think you have to do the first one to get to the second one. I think we feel comfortable enough we're going to come up with something that will satisfy that. And not that it's a rush, but I don't know the reason that we would delay this, because the inevitability is we want to streamline that regulatory process, which means consolidating that process within planning and zoning. That's really what we're accomplishing here.
I agree that creative destruction is part of growth and change, but it just... Before we pull it apart, I'd like to know that we have a plan, is all, and that we have a clear direction where we want to head next.
Well, let me ask this. Is there any other sentiment on the council that we need to delay this, or should we move forward? Okay. I guess we're going to move forward. Thank you so very much. Anything else on page 7? Page 8. Okay. Thank you. Item number 2 on the agenda. Boy, we only had item number 2. Here a presentation.
A whole lot faster.
Yeah. Here a presentation, discuss and provide direction on Express Library Pilot Project. Ms. Heather, the floor is yours.
Ask the questions no one else asks.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor, Council. I'm Heather Wolf, the Library Director. This is Kate Harris, our Assistant Library Director. Kate and I are here this morning to share with you our Express Library proposal. At the recommendation of our Library Advisory Board and the Community and Neighborhood Services Subcommittee. In its simplest terms, the Express Library proposal would allow us to operate... Oh, sorry. Can you hear me now? Would allow us to operate a storefront library in Southeast Mesa 3 days a week. Our capital costs would be covered by bond and impact fee money, and our operating expenses would be covered by our used book sale revenue. Storefront libraries are not new to the library world. In fact, in 1987, Mesa opened the Red Mountain branch as a storefront library. But the Express Library is a new variation on that theme. Really, it's a very tightly focused library. We would offer a sampling of and a connection to all the materials, information, and technology available throughout the system. Because of the tight focus, we would be allowed to offer library access to our users in a much smaller space and with fewer staff. Currently, we're looking at about 2,500 square feet. We'd be open Tuesday 10 to 7, Thursday and Saturday 10 to 5. Because of the minimal staff, we'd be looking at our customers operating the self-checkout machines for all of their checkout functions. About 80 to 85% of checkout happens at the self-check machines at our current locations. At this location, it would need to be 100% so that staff could focus on answering questions and helping people find materials. We'd also be looking at volunteers as a critical component of this library. They're always important, but at this library, they would actually take on the shelving and other paging duties, such as delivery, pulling holds, those sorts of things, again, allowing our staff to focus on helping the customer. In 2002, the library had a library facilities master plan prepared, and the consultant at that time looked at a number of factors for locating new libraries. One of the top recommendations was that we locate a branch in the southeast part of Mesa. The consultant looked at what the distance was to another location. You don't want to serve customers who are already being served. And they looked at the service area to make sure that it contained a significant population. Currently, that area has about 66,000 to 78,000 residents who did not have easy, accessible library service. The other advantage of that area is it's made up of the type of people that libraries love, families with children and older adults. They're the ones who use us the most, and as you know, that area is a prime location for those types of families. From this map, you can see where our current facilities are located. We use a 3-mile service radius to figure out what our population of users is. And then we also have drawn a circle for the new proposed Express Library. When we were looking at possible locations for the Express Library, we stayed within the Guadalupe corridor, but we also looked at Sossaman Road, Haas Road, as well as the Ellsworth Road area. Currently, Guadalupe and Haas is our primary location that we're interested in, and there's a number of reasons why. First of all, that's an underperforming retail center. There is a Walmart neighborhood market that's directly across the parking lot that's very popular. It's across the street from Sunland Village East, which we see as a great source of potential users, as well as the volunteers that we're going to need for this location. It's a half mile from an elementary school, and right now the lease rate that we're being offered is the most attractive out of the three different places that we've talked to. We propose to use $677,000 of the available bond and impact fee money to furnish and equip this location. As you know, bond and impact fee money can only be used to purchase capital items for expanding library service to a new population. But what makes this proposal so attractive to us is that of the $67,000 needed, only $45,000 is tied to location improvements. So if we wanted to change location in the future, 94% of the initial investment will transfer to the new location.
Heather, mm-hmm. just so we can clarify that impact fee, that's impact fees that are collected with each new construction. And there's an amount that's specifically identified and segregated for libraries. And as you said, they can only be used for expansion of services to new areas. So that's been sitting there collecting as we've over the years have built new residences and commercial where impact fees have been collected. So this is not something that we're saying, gee, we might get a lot in the future. This is something that's been accumulating for quite a while and is used periodically as the need arises. And this is the fund you're tapping into, correct?
That is correct, Mayor.
Okay. Just want to make sure we're clear on that.
Thank you. The operating expenses, the monthly rent and utilities, would be covered with our used book sale revenue. Fiscal year to date, we have $74,000 in that fund. On average, we make $4,000 to $5,000 in sales, and that is consistent for the years. I'm sure Chuck would appreciate such a consistent revenue source. Since 2006, the library used book sale money to purchase items related to our RFID conversion. We completed that project at the end of 2008, and this money has been sitting there waiting for a new project. We think the Express Library proposal is a great way to use that money, and with $74,000 already in the bank, we're well on our way to the money that we would need for a 2-year pilot project. When it comes to staffing, We continue to convert vacant librarian positions into less expensive library assistant and page positions as part of our new service model. As a result, since the beginning of the fiscal, since the beginning of the calendar year, we are now 2.3 additional FTE up. We propose using those two positions to staff this new location. We would minimize the impact to our other locations by rotating the coverage among existing staff, so workload and coverage would not be impacted at any one location. And again, we would be looking at the volunteers to help us significantly to help stretch those staffing. And recently, I had a conversation with the director for the MCC Library Tech Program and talked to him about maybe partnering with his program, providing some internship opportunities and some service learning credit hours for his students. Gives them a chance to get practical experience in the library, and it gives us some free labor. So we will be working on that. In the first year of operation, we would consider it a success if we issued 1,200 library cards, if we had 15,000 people visit us, and we checked out 35,000 items. And finally, the most common question I've been asked since the newspaper articles first appeared on this proposal is, when would it open? We had phone calls to the library, and that was very exciting for us. We're looking at probably May 2010. Depends on a couple of different things, but we would really like to open this branch before school is out and summer reading program starts.
Okay. Heather? Councilmember Kavanaugh has some questions.
Thank you. More of the nature of comments. We heard a very good presentation on this at our council committee several weeks ago. And it's ironic, I was part of the council in 2002 that approved the library master plan that called for five additional libraries for our community. And at that time, I had no idea that it would take 8 years to get one of the five additional libraries. And it's both a sad commentary but a happy commentary, because what the staff is proposing here is a great example of creativity and innovation. What else could we expect from people who work and staff our libraries in terms of the knowledge available to you and the options that you want to utilize? And so I think this is a great proposal for Southeast Mesa. I think it's an appropriate use of impact fees paid by residents over the years for expansion of our library services, a great use of operational costs from the used book sale, and a great opportunity for volunteers to step up and continue to help serve the community. So I want to compliment you. The library has been one of the, as with many of our city departments, has been incredibly creative in responding to the challenges and budget reductions of the past several years. But this is a very positive step and statement for the community. And so if you're looking for a motion, Mayor, I move approval of the staff recommendations.
Okay, we have a motion to approve. Staff recommendations. Do you have a second? Okay, Councilmember Summers. We have a motion and a second. Councilmember Summers, then Higgins, then Councilmember Fenter.
Does this require a federal environmental impact analysis? Then you might make the May deadline if it doesn't. Because I'm still waiting for a fire station. I'm a little sore about that. This is a fantastic and innovative way to provide some service. I liken it a little bit to ASU Polytechnic's concept. They have a small library there. It's very much like this, where they maintain only the books that are directly relevant to the services that they provide, or in your case, the highest demand books. And if you need anything else, you order it online, access the computer, they'll deliver it the next day. If it's an article, they deliver it to the email. I wrote my entire dissertation by library delivery to the Express Library at the Polytechnic campus. All the articles were delivered to me. I didn't have to sit in the library and turn the machines and find the journal articles. It was sent to me. I think it really responds. It's growing a library system that meets the way that the new generation of users access information through technology and more rapid access. So I applaud you for that. 3 days a week is going to be a sore point at some point. I know it is. Another innovative idea to leave it open a little bit longer would be to partner with a private sector, somebody who's going to be in business all the time, a coffee shop, a sandwich shop, a smoothie bar, something of that nature, who during their normal hours of operation would stay open, and maybe there's an opportunity to pair with them, with the deal being we'll provide computers, Wi-Fi, books, broadband. You stay open and serve sandwiches and make sure that our stuff doesn't walk out the front door. Maybe they can become part of the volunteer library service. And that way, rather than 3 days a week for however many hours, it could remain open, far longer. Have you looked into the possibility of maybe doing a public-private partnership like that?
Councilmember Summers, yes, actually we have started exploring that possibility. As you said, the Express Library, it's a new thing, and it really did start with academic libraries. They realized they could no longer warehouse information, and access became more important than ownership. So we're following in their footsteps, and because this is so new and so different, we can explore a lot of different things that we haven't ever looked at before. We have spoken with economic development about identifying potential partners, people who would have some sort of complementary business that, as you say, maybe we could share space, expenses, something, and help each other out. What they recommend is, because this is so new and we're not sure yet how many people are going to come through our door, that we give it 6 months to a year to figure out what our numbers are, and then we'll have information that we can share with potential partners, and hopefully our numbers will be fantastic and they'll want to partner with us.
Okay. And all that, we'll make sure that the lease allows us some flexibility to add a partner at some point if necessary, say in a year out. We decide, somebody comes forward and says, I would love to partner with you.
Yeah.
We'll be able to do that.
Right. We would look at trying to have an open suite next to us.
Very innovative. Creative. Thank you very much. Through.
I may have heard you wrong. Did you say you got your dissertation off the internet?
Yeah.
You absolutely heard me wrong.
Councilmember Higgins.
Heather, this is a great plan. I have a question, though. Could you explain to our viewers at home, but how the people going to the county library and how, where the money goes and how that happens and how this might help keep people in Mesa libraries and what fiscal impact that may have to benefit us?
Okay. Mayor, Councilmember Higgins, this was something I alluded to in the report, and you're right, the people at home probably aren't as familiar with this. There is a tax on your property tax bill that you pay the county library district, and it's called the library district tax, and it essentially takes money from every property owner in Maricopa County and puts it into the Maricopa County Library District. That money does not come to Mesa. I think a lot of people think that they are paying money to Mesa and that the Mesa Library receives it. We do not. The Library District runs their own system, and they have their own branches. They do offer a reciprocal borrowing program, which actually was in existence before the Library District came into being. And through reciprocal borrowing, we have a gentleman's agreement, as it were, among the various different libraries, and we allow Tempe residents, Gilbert residents, to use Mesa libraries at no cost, and then Mesa libraries can use those libraries at no cost. But we keep track of the numbers, and based on the net usage, the libraries get reimbursed by the library district. So at this point in time, we have 16,000 Mesa residents who find that the Southeast Regional Library in Gilbert, which is a county-run facility, is more convenient to them, which is one of the reasons why we're looking at placing the Express Library where we are. And so they use that library. As a result, Mesa does not get any reciprocal borrowing dollars. And essentially, our tax dollars that Mesa residents pay into the library district are going to Gilbert. That's kind of how I would explain it. Does that cover?
And so do you think this will help offset that? We might end up with a net with more people not going to other libraries since this one is available? Do you see that?
Well, I would certainly hope that of the 16,000 people who are currently using Southeast Regional, at least some of them will find that this library will meet their needs, at least some of the time. They're county resident. They're free to use any library they want to use. But hopefully we can start serving Mesa residents with a Mesa library. And eventually that balance might shift and we might find not only do our Mesa residents use this library, but we may have some other Gilbert Queen Creek residents that would come to this library as well.
Great. Thank you.
Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you. I just wanted you to know this is a wow moment for me. I'm amazed at what you guys are doing. If it was so, it wasn't so strange, I'd stand up and clap. Looking at what you're doing here, you're fast becoming the model that everybody in this city should point to and say, look at what they've done, innovation, leadership, taking a bad situation. We're extending services under some of the most difficult times. I'll tell you this. I'm going to go back to my district and be able to point to this and say, this is the new way, the smart way of doing business in the city of Mesa. So have my full support and appreciate your leadership over there. Everything, all the feedback I'm getting back is just great service. So thank you.
Thank you.
You know, and I won't echo what Alex just said because he says it much better than I could. But I will say that, you know, with the significant hits that your department has taken, you know, you could have reacted as many have, and that is crawl into the corner in a fetal position and just basically given up. And you know, I really appreciate that you not only didn't do that, but you looked at how can we not only survive but thrive, recognizing that nobody likes the situation we're in. You know, this is across the board. We can sit here and cry, but it's not going to do any good. We just have to hunker down and make things work. And you not only have made things work, but you have been innovative, you have been creative, and you have performed a great service for the citizens of Mesa. So we really do appreciate it. And this is just, as has been said, another example of some good things that are happening in our library and is an example for every government and every service and department in government at all levels, is that, you know what, you don't have to give up. You don't have to sit there and scream and yell at the sky's falling. It's a lousy situation. We're all in it. We need to make it work. And there's a lot of departments in our city that have answered the call and have not given up, but have done things better and done things more efficiently. You just happen to be the ones that are sitting here right now, and you've done a really great, a yeoman's job in doing that. So thank you so very much. Are there any other questions? We have a motion on the floor to accept the staff proposal to move ahead with this. No other discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. You have your direction.
Thank you so much.
Thank
you very
much. Appreciate it. Item number three is to acknowledge receipt of minutes of various boards and committees.
Move for approval.
Have a motion to approve from the Vice Mayor. Second by Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hear reports on meetings and our conferences attended. Councilmember Cavanaugh.
I want to report I attended Tuesday night. The Mesa School District had a very positive meeting at Powell Junior High School to review the recommendations that to the community in response to their economic challenges. And I want to compliment the governing board and the staff for being responsive to concerns that some of us expressed on behalf of the city and the neighborhoods affected by the proposed changes. We were very pleased to hear that Guerrero Elementary School will remain open, and that with the change in direction at Powell Junior High School, the school district is proposing to move more academic programs to that facility to ensure that it would be of the community and serving the community both day and evening in terms of courses for a variety of students, from high school kids through adults, through providing health services. And I want to compliment our colleagues for taking a creative and positive approach in a difficult economic time. There was a great turnout of residents and parents and kids from the community to offer their comments and suggestions to the governing board. Thank you.
Okay, Councilmember Summers.
Just wanted to let everybody know I filmed Masonell with Mr. Brady. We talked about some issues going on in District 6, so as soon as that website's updated, you'll be able to watch that and on Channel 11. And it was on Mesa City Radio talking about the same thing. So if you want to listen in, Channel 11, you'll hear some of that. Also, I think we need to recognize some staff. We had Turkey Tuesday, which they didn't give out stickers, so I had to go to Channel 12 to get my sticker. But they did a Turkey Tuesday, and Mayor, maybe you have the updated numbers, but I think our city, or maybe Mr. Brady does. How many turkeys did staff donate?
Well, Council, while we were updating all that, and we're actually going to have someone from the food bank here on Monday
to say
do a large
presentation.
All right,
presentation. We'll leave it. Yeah, we'll
kind of hold with a check, and it's both a monetary contribution as well as review the, but it is fairly significant. The city staff, in a very short time, made some really amazing, put some amazing work together on that. But we've got it all set up for Monday, so if we could wait and talk about it on Monday, that'd be...
You know, I think that's a good cliffhanger to make sure that people tune in to Channel 11 on Monday, so I will end it there. Thank you, Mayor.
Are we going
to
have another shakedown?
A jean shakedown? You know what? You know what? Christmas Angel is out. I'm saying, Christmas Angel's out.
Councilmember Fenter.
Thank you, Mayor. The Saturday before Thanksgiving, we had our day of service in District 2 and District 4. What an amazing event. We had over 500 volunteers, did service throughout Central Mesa. Just a good time, a lot of youth from different faith-based organizations. We also had our volunteers that handle our banded signs. And just a great coming together. This is going to be an annual event for District 2. It's going to be kind of like our pancake breakfast. And I really appreciate the support of staff and everyone that was involved. Just a great success.
Okay. Vice Mayor.
And to follow up with that, a special thanks to Lindsay and to Katie for all the work that they did in getting all the volunteers together. And we have in District 4 another service project that will involve students from Lincoln Elementary and from Jackson White Law Firm tomorrow. There's a considerable amount of service going on. We've had it in different districts and parts of the city. Continues. People are so willing to get out and participate, make the community better by giving of their time and their service. So a special thank you to all of them, and again, especially to Lindsay and Katie. And then Tuesday night also we had our light rail stakeholders group meet together. Councilmember Kavanaugh stops by to listen to what the residents have to say, but he had to leave to go to the other meeting. But we're having a great participation from those stakeholders. We're having a large number turn out. We have over 30 every time that we're meeting, and they're participating, and it's going extremely well. We're getting some good input, trying to move forward so we can get the light rail project moving as quickly as possible and through to downtown.
And Vice Mayor, also, there's a notice going out today. I think council should be getting it today, talking about using one of the storefronts downtown to provide information about 18 West Main. Thank you. The public can go in and look at some of the concepts that are being discussed about light rail. So it's during the day people can walk in and take a look
and,
at
well,
it.
Well, it's joint information. It's about light rail, but it's also about the planning process through the central corridor.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of information
going
there
out today with all the specifics and the hours, but we invite the public to take advantage of that opportunity.
Come downtown and see what's going to happen.
Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, had the opportunity to attend a fundraiser for Sunshine Acres a couple weeks ago at Longbow Golf Course, and it's one of their biggest fundraisers of the year. But what I want to send a special thank you to Bob McNichols, who actually allows the fundraiser at his golf course at no charge to anybody. So all the money raised goes directly to Sunshine Acres, which is wonderful. And a point, I guess you say, a personal order or whatever Summer said one day. I just wanted to send a congratulations to my son, Sean, and his teammates from the Valley Christian High School football team who won the 2A state football championship last weekend. Go Trojans. Thank you.
I didn't see that on the agenda either. That's twice today that you've done that. In our last Thursday, our family celebrated Thanksgiving. I don't know if anyone else did. It was a special day.
The Monday before that, I had the privilege of attending the breakfast for the Mesa Sports Hall of Fame. This is something that is really not very well known, that Mesa does have a Sports Hall of Fame. And as a matter of fact, if you want to see it, it's on the third floor of the Mesa Schools. I believe I can't remember the official name of the building, the Services Center, right there on Country Club, just south of Brown, that three-story building. It's on the third story. You can go in, and there's a lot of memorabilia of important athletic events in Mesa's history, and a Hall of Fame, which recognizes the great athletes that this community has produced over the years. So I had the opportunity to attend that, and just want to let everyone know that that does exist, and it's a great thing to go to. Okay, next issue. No, you know, sometimes these Hall of Fame committees just overlook the obvious. What can I say? Wait, you're mentioning Tubby the Tube at the same time we're talking about Sports Hall of Fame?
That's an evolution.
I think that's when people look at me, they can't imagine there was ever any athletic ability in this body.
No, I think there's a picture of you in some really short basketball.
There are. Hot pants. Yeah. And then a couple weeks ago, I had one of the funnest times I've ever had. And thanks to the Symphony of the Southwest, which, by the way, is another great secret. We have an outstanding symphony orchestra in our community, the Symphony of the Southwest. And a couple weeks ago, they had a kids' day, and they invited me to narrate a little program called Tubby the Tuba. Now, I grew up on Tubby the Tuba, and I find out that most people did not. So I'm sorry that you did not have the great opportunity to have Tubby the Tuba be part of your life. But most of you listened to Peter and the Wolf. Now, if you would have turned the record over, you would have probably found Tubby the Tuba on the B-side. And so it was a lot of fun and was very, very, except for my part, the rest of the orchestra was very professional. And we had a good time. You know, we dressed up in tuxes and everything. And so it was really nice. It was in the Aikido Theater, which reminds me what a gorgeous facility that is. So that was my fun time.
Well, you did a very nice job, and I will say you did a good job of following the director when he gave you your cue.
Thank you very much. The vice mayor was there, and council member Richens, and I refused to look at them during the performance.
You got rave reviews from the 10 children, nieces, and nephews that I took.
Good. So thank you. Okay. Anything else? Mr. Brady.
Thank you, Mayor. Mayor and Council, reminder, we do have a council meeting on Monday, but also this Saturday, Councilman Kavanaugh will have his pancake breakfast and holiday toy drive at Fire Station 207. So we invite everybody to participate in that. I believe that goes from 8 a.m. to 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., so I encourage everybody to participate in that. Also, this Saturday, also, we have, if you recall last time, we had quite a turnout on the recycling of our old appliances and computers. So we're going to do a drive just for that this Saturday, from 8 to noon. So residents that are interested in recycling their old appliances, computers, and electronics can bring them to the city's recycling event at 2412 North Center Street, so our North Center Street location. So we're going to do that this Saturday, and then the following week, the 12th, we'll have our household hazardous waste collection at the same location. But we're trying to separate those two and see if that helps alleviate some of the pressure. Also, just a reminder, Council, next week, have a lot going on Tuesday. We have the council meeting on the 7th, Monday the 7th. On Tuesday, December 8th, we have the grand opening of CMC Steel. I believe that's approximately Meridian and Germain. So you should receive your invitation for that. And also that later that evening, we'll be having a joint meeting with the town of Gilbert. That meeting will begin at 6 p.m. at the ASU Polytechnic campus. Thank you, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. Next item is items from citizens present. Spark, do we have any requests to speak?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay. I'll entertain a motion to enter into a motion to enter into executive session, a second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are now going into executive session. Thank you very much.